Hey guys, grab yourself a coffee or a tea and get comfortable. We're traveling across Japan without ever leaving home. This is episode 4 of the At Home Show. I'm Norman. This is the Tokyo Lens Podcast. Welcome to the At Home Show. And as always, if you're a regular listener, welcome back. Today in our travels, we are making our way right into the middle of Japan, central Japan, if you will, into the major city of Osaka. Now, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't know Osaka, whether it be the friendly, outgoing people, the street food, any one of the many, many things that make the city as famous as it is. And it is obviously home to our next guest, somebody who has quite literally made a career of traveling. They've lived in both Tokyo and Osaka and have a great view of the contrast between the two places. Today, we're at home with Hannah. All right, sitting down today with a good friend, a creator who is currently based in Osaka. We are talking to currently Hannah. Worst intro ever, but we'll go with that. We'll go with that. How are you doing today, Hannah?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I am doing good. So for anybody who's currently, I feel like I'm saying currently way too much.
Don't worry, anytime I say the word currently as well, I'm always like, gotta do a little like, do you get it?
So for anybody listening to this at the moment who may know who you are, would you be so kind as to give us a bit of an intro?
Yes, I am Hannah and I am Australian. And I am living in Japan, yes, living in Osaka. I make videos about travel in general, mostly Japan, just because I am based here at the moment, but I do travel around a fair bit whenever I can. And in the past 6 months or so, I've started to focus a little more on doing kind of little mini deep dives into various topics and little mini, I don't know, little festivals and aspects of Japanese life that you don't normally get on a regular travel vlog. Mm. Like diving a little deeper into these topics and, discussing different sides. And they're really fun. They're really, really fun for me to make. And it's nice to kind of branch away from just doing travel vlogs because, yeah, if you do the same thing 200 times, it gets a little boring after a while.
It's easy to kind of fall into a rhythm, which makes the process itself easier, but it kind of kills the love inside of yourself, right? You still enjoy the travel, but you kind of feel like the content, you're trying so hard to avoid cookie cuttering the content that you produce it, right? So
I just recently made a video. It's called Solo Female Traveler in Japan or something like that. And I went to Murakami, which is like a teeny tiny little countryside town in Niigata, like quite far away. And it was for like a tourism board trip. The company who sent me there, they didn't send me with like any tour guide or anything like that. Mm. Like it was like my own itinerary. They were like, you just go there. You need to go to these three places and you need to shoot these three things. And then the rest is up to you. And I was like, okay. And then actually when I got there, I realized I was like, oh, there's not a whole lot actually here. Hmm. So what can I, like, you kind of forced me to think outside the box a little bit. And so I decided to make the video without any talking at all, which is a very Craig Adams thing to do if anyone's into travel vlogging. It's very Craig Adams. So I just decided to like give it a go. And it was like, I actually really loved it. Mm. I liked filming it, obviously, because I didn't feel the need to like talk about everything all the time and like interrupt my actual travel and enjoyment of the trip, but by like turning the camera and be like, oh, so I'm at this place. Like you can just showing everything. And it was actually really nice to be able to challenge myself in a different way that wasn't just making travel videos the way that I always have. Mm. And it just sucks because like I made that one and I was like, wow, I really like that. I want to do another one like that. However, now I cannot, but that's okay. But eventually, when everything's back to normal, I'd love to do more travel videos like that. Because it's a similar format, but just a different, just challenging myself in a different way. Because you're right. Like once you get used to the way you make something, like getting a format, it definitely makes things faster and more efficient, but it can definitely kill the creativity after a while. Just doing the same thing again and again. So
when I watched that video, I was probably a good 3-4 minutes in. There was something about the intro of that video and the way that it was approached that just made me want to keep watching. Like the first 3 seconds were handled so well that I sat back in my chair. Wasn't until well over half the video until I realized,
there's
no talking in this video. And then I leaned forward again and I just like,
I remember what the first 3 seconds of my video was.
It was less about what it was and just kind of how much brevity it gave you in the scene. Like it just kind of, it pulls you into this moment. I was like, you know what? I like that. I want to open in a slightly similar way, but I don't have a project that I can do this with yet. And then I got approached about this ramen one and I was like, oh, I don't want to talk through a ramen one. You know what I mean? I want to make it about ramen. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. So, I'll definitely check it out.
There is something I wanted to ask you about, and it's out of the travel, out of the I guess, creator friends I have, I think that it's safe to say that you're one of the most traveled in terms of just overall, like you did the road trip, you've lived in different areas in Asia, you've done so much, traveled so many places, you've done a lot of it solo, and it's something that I feel you have a great deal of comfort with and hopefully can speak to fairly well. And I'd love to hear some travel stories, maybe something simple, like starting with like, there had to be a first time that you traveled solo.
I mean, the first time that I ever came to Japan was by myself, but it wasn't for travel. It was like for work, and also I guess in my first year in Japan, all of my friends, like none of them had the same days off as me. So I just had no choice. I would just go into the city and explore Osaka by myself. I guess, I don't know, that was probably the first time, but probably like first time traveling overseas by myself. It was probably, I went to Europe for like a month, maybe 2 months. I can't even remember, honestly, but I went to 7 different countries. Wow. It was way too short. Like it was like a couple of days in each place. It was mayhem. And also, even like thinking back to this just like makes me nervous. I did couch surfing the whole time. Like I didn't pay for any accommodation the whole entire time. I was like 20-year-old Hannah, hadn't even done all that much travel yet. Just traveling around Europe, staying in random people's houses. Who let me do that?
It sounds incredibly safe.
It's just so safe. The most safe. Thankfully, my parents, they've always been like super understanding and very trusting of me. And I love them for that. Like their method of bringing me up as a kid is like, show them respect and then they will show you respect as well. So it's like a mutual thing. So they've always been very, trusting of my decisions and everything. And I did do a bit of research about couch surfing, but And I stayed mostly with females the whole time as well. And it was obviously fine. Nothing bad happened. But like looking back, I'm like, ooh, that was a bit of a naive decision that I made there. Just a little bit. But no, that was really great. It was a great trip around Europe. It was freezing cold. It was off season and everything was full of construction. But it was a wonderful traveling experience and doing it solo is, I don't know, it's not always great traveling solo. Like, I feel like it's always romanticized in TV shows and movies being like, it's like that eat, pray, love thing where you travel somewhere and it's just me and my backpack, me against the world, live, laugh, love. And like, you discover yourself and, you do yoga and stuff like that. But it's totally not always like that. It's most of the time it gets to like a week or 2 weeks in, and you start to feel a little bit lonely, or like you start to like you experience something that's really cool, and you just get this like, oh, this is awesome, but I'm by myself. Like, I can't share this kind of, you know, excitement with anyone else. And that's when it gets really like, oh, I kind of wish that I wish that I was with someone else. But at times where, like, I don't know, I'll spend like 20 minutes or like an hour in just this one tiny little shop because I love all the tiny little trinkets in it. That's where I'm like, okay, now I'm glad that I'm by myself because I get to go by my own schedule and I get to spend as long or as little as I want in each place. So that is great. But yeah, there's totally like ups and downs, definitely. But I think especially in like movies, it's always like romanticized a lot. But it can get pretty lonely sometimes, which is why I don't do it for like extended periods of time, because yeah, it's a lot.
You're like, I don't do it for extended periods of time, just as you finished telling me that you traveled for like a month around Europe all by yourself.
Well, that was the first time that I ever did it, so I learned pretty quickly.
Fair enough. I had a friend who recently traveled to Japan completely solo for the first time, and about 2 to 3 weeks into the trip, he just stopped replying to messages from anyone. And we started to worry. We worried something really terrible had happened to him. And when I finally got in touch with him, he's like, sorry, I've never spent this much time alone with myself. I came to Japan with a great deal of excitement because it was always my dream to come here. And for some reason, somewhere around the 2.5 week mark, I got hit with this weird, I don't want to call it depression because I wasn't depressed, but this weird deep emotional cave of confusion where I didn't know how I felt. And as we talked about it, it reminded me that actually on my very first trip to Japan, around the time that my Japan rail pass ran out, so around the 3 week mark, I spent like 3-4 days just locked in a room, not talking to anybody. Can't really describe what it was. Maybe it was self-discovery. I have no idea, really. All I know, it was just I needed a couple days to just kind of be. So what I guess I'm getting at, since I'm rambling, is have you, in any of your travels, found a couple days where you've just needed to just stop traveling and just have some time to yourself, or you found yourself in a similar feel or situation?
I guess like when I went to Vietnam for, I think, 3 weeks,
okay. Maybe.
And this was like quite early on in my YouTube days, but I was filming every day as in like one day, one video, which is a format I couldn't do anymore for like a long trip. Like, hell no. 3 or 4 days in one video. Thank you. But I mean, you know, right at the start, I had all of the, what's that called? Beginner's gusto kind of thing. And so I was like 2 weeks into the trip, I guess. And then one of the days I was like walking along this rocky surface, and there was like this little drop off of a cliff at the edge. And I was holding on to my camera that was attached to a gorilla pod. And then I slipped on a rock, and then I kind of jerked the gorilla pod like away to like as I caught myself, but because of the jerk, the GorillaPod was a cheap knockoff. The camera snapped off the end of it, just went bing, bing, whoosh, and just like dropped off the edge of this cliff.
No.
So I went down to the bottom of the hill, and the camera was like completely smashed. And I was like, this is a Canon G7X Mark II. So it's like a little point and shoot camera. So it was, you know, maybe about $700. Something like that, around that mark. But I'd only had it for like a year or something, or less than a year, and I was like, nah, like so sad. And so the next day, I was like, no, but I have to keep filming, because it was like my own kind of stubbornness. Like, I couldn't not complete the task that I'd set myself. So I filmed the next video on my GoPro, which is the worst thing you could do. actually, no, the GoPros that are out at the moment, they're great. But it was a GoPro Hero 4. It's got like no stabilization. The microphone sucks. I'm pretty sure for some of it, I filmed it like inside a waterproof case because it's the only case I had. So like, it's terrible, awful.
The whole video just sounds like,
exactly. Oh man. And then I think that very next day I caught this like overnight train to Hanoi, which is like a big bustling city in Vietnam. And like, I just wasn't feeling well when I got there. I started to like, I think I must've had like a fever or I was just feeling really ill. And, but I had to go to this one camera shop that was the only camera shop that was like certified Sony dealer that would sell the camera that I knew I was going to buy next. So I had to make sure I had enough cash out to go to this place and like, and I finally found it, but it wasn't open for another couple of hours. So I was like, oh God. And I was like about to pass out. Like my face is all white. I'm sweating. It's like 35 degrees Celsius, just like dying in the heat. And I was just like, this is awful. And I started to like film some stuff. And then I was like, I don't have to do this. Like I said, a moment, I was like, why am I killing myself to film this video when I'm literally like, I've got a fever and I'm like trying to buy a camera with no Vietnamese language skills whatsoever. It was like Google Translate. And I was just like, I don't have to do this. So I just didn't film that day. And it was the best decision ever. So yeah, that day I literally, I just sat inside of just a cafe and I just like sat on my computer and did some work. I think also I was like walking around the city and it was like so busy and it was so hot. And then I looked to the side of the road and then I saw like a dog in a cage, like outside a restaurant. And I was like, okay, I'm done. Today's over. This is, I've finished. I'm going to go to a cafe and I'm just going to sit here for the rest of the day. And then tomorrow I'm going somewhere else. And it was great. It was exactly what I needed. And I bought the camera I wanted. And then I just started fresh the next day. So yeah, definitely like, I don't know. I think I get really, I don't know what it is. It's like you set a goal and you've got to, like, there's just that part of me that's like, I can't turn back on this challenge. Like I've set this goal for myself. I'm going to do it kind of thing. So I can get a bit like that sometimes, like if I'm traveling, but yeah, occasionally it's good to just be like, you know what? That's okay. I don't have to like kill myself just to get this, because the reason that I am making videos is because I enjoy doing it and I enjoy the aspect of like being able to tell stories and being creative in that way. And if that's not what's happening because I'm like tired or sick or, you know, whatever, then there's no reason for me not to be able to just put the camera down for that day and that's okay. Although, yeah, this was like a couple of years ago when I was like, really like, I will complete all the tasks. But like over the years, I've learned to like forgive myself to the point where I was like, oh no, it's fine. I don't have to. To where now I'm like, oh, I need a little more of that like again, because I'm like forgiving myself too much and then I just get lazy.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just what happens when you get older.
I think it makes a big difference when you're traveling with purpose as well. And the simple act of wanting to kind of capture and document everything you're doing gives you a little more purpose to that travel. I feel like anybody who has been lucky enough to have access to the technology, whether it be a phone to take photos with or a camera, is going to be so grateful for that in the next like 5 to 10 years. Like I'm now looking back at tapes from an old Sony Handycam that I recorded from my first trip to Japan 15 years ago.
And I
couldn't be happier that I have those tapes.
Yeah.
There is another question that I want to ask you that I feel is going to just create an entire new segment of this episode, but I think I will do that after the break. So if you've been listening to the At Home Show series as a whole, by this point you know that I don't have a sponsor and there's not going to be a fancy ad here. But did you know that I actually almost lost the entire project due to a couple audio effects added that just glitched the entire thing. The whole thing came crashing down. It took me days to recover. It put me behind. It was a whole thing. It was absolutely. I'm going to be honest with you. I was scared. I was like, oh boy, we put a lot of effort into this. And if it all comes crashing down now, but guess what? We didn't. Everything's fine. And I've backed up everything like 3 times a day since then. So there's a little behind the scenes fact for you. If you enjoy these little behind the scene facts and videos and everything like that, I invite you to come over and hang out with us over on the community that we have going on at Patreon. We've even recently set up a Discord server where we hang out, we play games, we do all of that stuff. I'm not going to ramble on about it. I'm just going to leave it right there. You do with it what you will, and we're going to jump right back into the episode. And welcome back from the break. We are sitting down with currently Hannah, and I don't even know why I gave this update, because if you're listening to the second half of this podcast, chances are you probably listened to the first half. Hannah, welcome back.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for having me back.
It was a terrible lead-in. That's on me. So there... it should be obvious at this point that we both do the YouTubes, and recently I've been getting the odd comment on both my YouTubes and my Instagrams saying, would you please help Hannah complete her bingo sheet? And we're going to loop around to that in a second. They're saying like, well, you know, Norm, you literally check off all the things that she's missing. Get that bingo sheet filled out. Now, for anybody who hasn't seen this absolute hoot of a video, can you describe the concept a little bit for us?
So I've seen like, you know, everyone's got like the Instagram templates that, you know, you circle the things that you've done in each country or, you know, which things you prefer. I made a similar one, like a first time in Japan bingo card. But instead of like the typical ones that's like eat sushi or watch a sumo wrestling match or whatever, it was things like find a trash can in public or find a passed out salaryman on the side of the road, and like things that are not impossible to find in Japan, but they can be quite difficult. Like find someone wearing my merchandise, which is very difficult because not many people bought it. So little things like that. Actually, it's kind of funny because people have, someone made a, I don't know who it was, someone on Instagram made a, just a normal kind of Japan bingo card. It was like, you know, very like standard time in Japan kind of thing. Drink a chuhai. And like, I've seen like a couple of my friends from like Disney and USJ that have been like filling it out and like posting it to their stories and like tagging me in it. They're like, Hannah, you got to fill this out. I'm like, so offended that how dare you fill out somebody else's bingo card, and it's not even funny.
And that's the thing, yours was really really funny. What I'm going to do is I'm going to link that particular video along with your channel in the description box, because I think everybody should see. I feel like the description box is just going to be full of things I want people to watch from you, like that solo travel video. It was just a really, it was an interesting concept. Every now and then we get something that we're like, oh, that's a little unique. And
yeah, I haven't seen that before.
That one, Melbourne, was fun. So I personally can't remember off the top of my head exactly which ones it was. I think maybe one is you haven't met with Chris yet, right?
Right, yes. Actually, like, quick note on that. It's really funny. Occasionally I'll get, like, I'll just get, I don't know, quite a couple, like, comments or DMs, and they're all like, Hannah, you should do a collaborate. We should collab with, do a collaborate. You should do a collaborate on the YouTubes with Abroad in Japan. And I'm like, guys, that's like, I don't know, that's like saying, oh, you know science, you should win the Nobel Prize. Like,
wow. I'm going to be sending this audio directly to Chris and the YouTube. You are the Nobel Prize of YouTubers.
Or like, I don't know, just like anything like, oh, you know how to juggle, you should be in Cirque du Soleil. Like, it's If all of my followers are already following him, like, it's got to be a two-way street, you know what I mean? I've got to have something to offer. feel like I haven't got much. So
it kind of reminds me of, so there's this like thing that people used to, I don't know if they still do it with Canadians. They're like, oh, you're from Canada? Do you know Joe?
Yeah.
Joe. He's
dead. Yeah, I know Joe. yeah.
So outside of that particular square, are there any that you have not checked off yet?
That I have not checked off. I just had the list up before. What was
I feel
it?
Like there was a car one.
Tokyo Drift in real life. I've never seen a car drift in Japan. Although I know I've seen that you put out a video that was like basically people that were drifting.
Yeah. So before I started the channel, that's actually what I used to do. It was one of the things that actually triggered me, because now, as you know, I play the shamisen. Mm. And one of the things that triggered me into that lifestyle was purchasing a drift car, driving it for some time until I destroyed it. And that was a whole big thing.
Where did you do it? In Canada?
No, that was here in Japan.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Yeah. So I had no idea. Anybody who's never heard the story or might just be stumbling on this episode, I had lived in West Tokyo. And when I was living in West Tokyo, one of my neighbors had a drift car and I would walk by and chat with him every day. And one day he was like, do you want to come to the circuit with me? And I was like, yes, I do. I really do. And shortly after that, one of his team members, I'd say a month or two of me going to the circuit with him almost every Sunday, one of his team members was having a baby and needed to sell their car. And so they're selling this insanely powerful, souped up, drift ready car for like less than $3,000.
Yeah, man, I'd buy it.
He convinced them to sell it to me. We started going out to the circuits and training areas. I would go out to Saitama, Chiba, Fukushima, all of the different places. We would do meets on the weekends. It was a spectacularly expensive time.
That's awesome.
The gasoline, the oil, the tires, all of that. And it all came to a very abrupt end. But I stayed in touch with the guys. A good buddy of mine who runs a channel here in Japan named Albo is still very much in that drift scene. And I think the last time was maybe October or September of last year. I went up to, there's a big circuit in Fukushima called Ebis Circuit. And one of the things, you know, I think we should just pencil in this as a little bit of a plan, because we got to get this bingo card boxed off. They have something called the drift taxi.
Is it real?
It's real.
Is it safe though?
It is. The gentleman who does it is incredibly skilled. It feels like you're going faster than you've ever gone in your life and you're going to die. But really, he's only driving the car at about half the speed he was if he was going on his own. He's just, he's like putting through. It's just terrifying to the passengers. And
sounds like
you can experience the circuit in this drift taxi. I know I've already pushed one video to you today, but if you have a bit of spare time, I think I did a video called 1 Week in My Life in Japan. Mm-hmm. And I've got the whole drift taxi experience in there if you want to see what it's like.
Oh, cool.
Also, some hidden guests at the end of that one. Stick around. But that there is something that I think once we get our travel legs back again, we should just pencil that in and box off the drift taxi.
That sounds great. I've not seen any. Actually, I saw like the coolest, pretty sure it was a Lamborghini, like straight out of a like billionaire kind of movie. Yeah. Like straight out of that. It was like the yellow one. It was freaking awesome. It was like right outside my apartment. And then he walked inside and I was like, you live here? What are you doing here? Yeah, it felt very cool.
There's a gentleman in Japan. I think his name is Shinichi Morohoshi. Mm. And he has a collection of really decked out Lamborghinis with like, they're bedazzled and stuff like that. Like when I say bedazzled, I mean like a pair of jeans. They're all done out in sequins and other crazy things.
Oh God, what is that brand? Harley Davidson? No. Sorry. Continue. There's a brand of clothing and it's just covered in diamantes and it looks tacky.
Yeah. And these Lamborghinis are no different. I think if you just like Google Japan crazy Lamborghinis, his cars will come up.
I've seen one car in like one little street in Shinsaibashi, I think. Yeah, and the whole thing is like covered in diamantes. It's only on display though. It's like only ever been on display. Michaela posted on her Instagram story once, I think, about it was like a karaoke taxi.
Yeah.
And it looked awesome. But like it was funny because he didn't mention anything to her about it. And then like she asked him, I guess, in Japanese, and he just kind of like opened up and it's just like, well, now that you're asking, and he just like told her like everything about it, and he was like, yeah, and this is like the best quality microphone, and he's like, and I put the words up on here, and like the speaker's really good, and he was like, but I mean, I won't do it right now obviously because of, you know, everything that's happening, but normally this is like such a great, like really really good karaoke. And like, oh man, there's nothing that makes me happier than seeing people that are really into something like talk about how much joy something gives them. Like, oh, I just love it so much. And yeah, I was just like, I wonder how many like interesting, I don't know, if there's like themed taxis, like novelty taxis in Japan. I'm sure that would be.
Karaoke taxis. There's
gotta be. Yeah.
If there's one karaoke taxi, there's gotta be more.
I know. It's an untapped market, if not. Like, why is that not a thing?
It's like the vending machines, right? There's like a hidden banana vending machine in Shibuya.
Banana vending machine. That's cool.
Underground where Staya is where there used to be one. I don't know if it's still there. There's like thinking of wild things that you really hope don't exist, like an onsen taxi. Like.
Yeah, it was funny. Like my mind immediately just went to fire. Like, I don't know why. I was just like, something's got to be on fire.
Yeah, there's like a yakitori taxi.
Yeah.
Guy sits in the passenger seat just
like sizzling, get some yakitori.
I will say as a disclaimer, the drift taxi does not go onto the streets in drift. It stays in the circuit. But there are several courses. There's like a mountain course. And, you know, as I said, it's on the schedule. We will leave it be. Excellent. Is there anything else that pops to mind on the bingo card that you haven't addressed yet?
Will Harajuku go? I don't think that I've... Maybe only like once, maybe. I did actually read an article recently that like the Harajuku girl, like the typical, what you think of when you say the word Harajuku girl, that kind of style or like fashion scene has died down in Tokyo quite a bit because I think once because like there were too many tourists trying to get photos with them. That was another reason as well, but I can't remember what it was. But yeah, it's definitely like not as popular as it used to be, especially not in Harajuku. Like, I'm sure they would be around, just not in, like, not in Takashita Dori, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the last time I've seen them there. I do remember, 2005? Around 2005 when I hit the area for the first time, they were just there. It was like in the exact same way that Hachiko is in Shibuya, they were just there.
Right. But
it's not like it's an area that I frequent, but I genuinely can't remember the last time I've seen. Have you ever seen a gyaru?
Yes. In Osaka. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, okay. Osaka would be the gyaru.
Yeah, I feel like it's an
Yamamba.
Osaka thing. I don't know why.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to put this on you. I'm going to put all the pressure on you 100%. Mm-hmm. If you were to describe a gyaru to our listeners, how would you describe that?
See, okay, it's tough without sounding like I'm trying to make them sound bad. You know what I mean? Like I'm not trying to offend anybody or like put in any stereotypes. But in my head, when I think of gyaru, it's usually a girl that has quite a lot of fake tan on, and like it's like a bronzer on their face, except for like the eye area, it's like white. I don't know why they leave the eye area very white, and their hair is usually like bleached Japanese hair, so it's not like blonde but like the orangey kind of blonde, I guess. And it's usually like curled and very big, and they wear a lot of like loud kind of bright jewelry and a really bright colored outfit that's usually like and I think it's usually like a tracksuit kind of thing, like matching Adidas, like, you know, sweatpants and a jacket kind of thing. And for some reason, they always wear Crocs and socks. Like, that's in my head. I don't know if that's a thing or if that's just like two things I put together, but that's definitely what it feels like to me. Mm. But yeah, I guess it would be, I don't know if this is correct or not. I might just be offending a bunch of people, but is it kind of like the Japanese version of like a chav, perhaps? It feels like it.
There's these like little mini subcultures, and it's really hard to tell where the line is. Like, there's Yankee, and when I imagine Yankee, I imagine the tracksuits. I imagine like Hello Kitty slippers from the dollar store worn with socks. I imagine like just blonde hair, nails super long. But Gyaru shares some of these traits as
like
well.
So the, many like eyelashes.
The like you can feel the wind coming off when they blink, right? And then there's a Yamamba, which is like a much more extreme. If you were to just visually compare it to Gyaru, like they've really got like the white panda eyes, much darker skin. Rather than the blonde hair, they typically have it bleached almost to the point where it's white. But again, I could be like crossing boundaries or mixing these.
Yeah.
I've never really looked like the people who have a love for these. Yeah, really do. But you don't get to see them as much anymore.
That's a good point, actually. It has been a while since I've seen a Gyaru. Now that I think about it.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder why that would be.
Up until somewhat recently, you spent quite a while living in the Tokyo area.
Yes.
Actually, you've kind of lived all over, but when we spent, I think, the greatest bulk of time together, you were living in Tokyo, and then you had gone, you did a road trip around the States. I feel like that's going to have to be a talk all of its own at some point. And now you've made your way to Osaka. I feel you have the most experience, if you will, living in the two places to be able to make a clean and like accurate comparison. So for you, what are the big lifestyle differences as a resident who's lived in both Tokyo and Osaka?
I'd say like Osaka is much more chill. Everyone's much more relaxed. Everyone's really laid back. People are much more likely to talk to me in Osaka.
Okay.
Whereas like, because there's just like in general, I guess less people around, less tourists, much less tourists. So therefore you stand out a lot more. So people look at you a lot more. People try to talk to you a lot more, which is, you know, good and bad in the right different ways. I felt like in Tokyo, I felt as though I was a nuisance. Like my mere presence on the train is like, I'm sorry for taking up space. Oh my God. Like, I'm so sorry. Like I would just try to like stay out of everyone's way because everyone is so busy and they're, you know, they've all got work and everyone's in a rush to get everywhere. So that's kind of how I felt when I was in Tokyo. Like I just felt like I was taking up space and I'm like, I'm sorry for being a nuisance. But in Osaka, I feel a lot more, it's not like I felt unwelcome in Tokyo, but Osaka, it just feels like I can just be myself and chill without anybody, I don't know, without feeling like I'm a nuisance, basically. Actually, like the best story that I've got about this, I was on the train in Tokyo, like the train to get to Tokyo Station, and I had a little rolly suitcase with me. And the train left, and I guess I wasn't holding on to my suitcase, and it kind of rolled a little bit and then hit a Japanese lady on the legs.
Okay.
Like it wasn't hard, it just kind of like rolled into her. And I like picked it up and I was like, oh, sumimasen, gomenasai. And then like she kind of just like looked down at me and was just, gave me like a little down up look with a scowl on her face, like get it. Oh, she almost did a little like, oh, how dare you. But she didn't do it, but you know, you could feel the like, ugh, why did you do that kind of thing. And I was like, oh God, I'm so sorry. And I sat down in my chair and then I caught the Shinkansen to Osaka. And then when I was in Osaka, I caught another little train out from Osaka Station. And the exact same thing happened to me by accident. Did not plan it. And it rolled into another lady's legs. And I did the same thing. I was like, oh, sumimasen, gomenasai. And like expecting the same reaction. And then she just like rolls it back to me. She's like, oh, daijoubu desu. And like rolls it back to me. And I'm like, Osaka, I love you.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really nice. It was like quite funny that the exact same situation happened, and the difference was that much of a stark difference. But I will say, in terms of things to see, like sightseeing wise and like photography wise and just like general exciting things that's going on, Tokyo definitely has a lot more there. It's such a huge city and there's so many different areas and different kinds of city that you can see. Like it's got like nature, it's got neighborhood vibes, it's got very, you know, metropolitan city kind of thing. Whereas Osaka is just a much smaller version of that, so it's not as many cool places around as Tokyo. So for a tourist, Tokyo is the best. But for living, I much prefer Osaka.
Well, that's a really good breakdown. I think there's one really big takeaway in there as well, which is you need to be a lot more careful with your suitcase.
yeah, clearly not paying attention.
Clearly not. I spent a little bit of time in Osaka. I was shooting a documentary in Osaka probably 3 months ago, 2 months ago. I don't even know. I've lost track of all time lately.
What a day.
It could have been yesterday. I don't know. But I spent the weekend there and then I had an extra day. And on that extra day, I decided I was going to go out and make just a video in Osaka because this is the first time I had been there in 15 years and the last time I did nothing there. And I started in Dotonbori. And decided to do that whole area. I grabbed some mochi and I grabbed the three color mochi, of course.
Solid choice.
Just, it felt like the thing to do. And then I decided, you know what? I want to explore Osaka my way. I'm not going to get on the train. I'm not going to do any of that. I am going to walk from Dotonbori to the Umeda Sky Building.
It's pretty far. Yeah.
And there was one thing that really stood out to me. Biggest difference for me between Osaka and Tokyo was the lack of, how can I put this? Okay, you'll understand this immediately. You cannot walk 10 minutes in any direction in Tokyo without running into some hidden little backstreet shrine.
Yeah.
There are tiny shrines and temples everywhere. And I thought in this hour and a half, nearly 2 hour walk in Osaka, I would have the same or at least a similar experience. But I don't think I came across one shrine or temple hidden in the back streets.
The ones like the main strip that goes from like Dotonbori to Umeda, it's like pretty metropolitan. It could be any city. You know what I mean? Like you walk around, it's like, oh, big, tall buildings, lots of people. Yeah. That's very true, actually. Tokyo definitely has, like, a lot of little, like, side alleys. And Osaka does have it, but only in specific areas.
Yeah.
Tokyo is just so big and so dense that you can find them anywhere. yeah.
And weirdly enough, like, Tokyo, you can go into a back street and it'll be, you can be in Shinjuku and you'll find a back street that has like one person walking down it very slowly. But Osaka, it didn't matter how deeply I tried to get into these back streets. At one point I opened up Google Maps and I was like, okay, where are the tiniest streets I can find? There were still people on every single, it's like everyone was evenly dispersed throughout the city.
Yeah, that's true. It was like, Tokyo was like one big stream of people.
Yeah.
And then like tiny little back streets. But yeah, I guess in Osaka it just feel like a lot more spread out. In general, everything just feels a lot more spread out, I think.
Yeah.
if you compare it to Tokyo, for sure.
So I've got to get back and spend more time there. But speaking of time, before we drag, I feel like this conversation could literally just continue and go on and on and on.
So, yeah, and there's like heaps of things to talk about.
yeah, we will. We'll put a pin in this one right here. We've got plenty to do for a future episode. Any closing thoughts, remarks, any of those wonderful sentiments that us YouTubers love to insert in content? I don't know. I'm just saying words to give you time to think.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about much these days. Closing thoughts. Japan. The Olympics is happening next year. That'll be exciting. And
you really committed to that statement. For reference, in all fairness, almost every other episode in this program has been recorded like midday or morning or something. I think this is the only one that we've recorded at the very end of the day. So I appreciate the time and the effort, even though I know it's been a long. You went to immigration today, didn't you?
I did. I went all the way to immigration. It's like the furthest stop from everything in Osaka.
Did it go
okay? It
was fun.
It went all right. I was actually in there for like 20, 30 minutes. Yeah, it was fine.
That's literally the best you can ask for.
I know, honestly.
Like really. Excellent.
But now I got to wait like a month until I hear anything back. So can't wait.
It's so much fun.
Immigration.
Well, thank you again so much for joining me on this episode. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me on. It's really fun. I haven't done many podcasts before, so it's cool. Thanks for having me on.
Anytime. And we will talk to you again real soon.
Yeah. Talk to you soon, guys. Bye.
Whether it be a little video about Tokyo, something traveling across Japan, a small documentary, a day in the life, the making of a desk, even making my own shelf, I've always enjoyed trying out different types of content on the channel. It's nice just to change things up and try new things every now and then. And that's one of the reasons why I've always enjoyed talking to and working with Hannah, because her channel is full, and I mean full, of different video concepts that she has tried out over the years, and they are all a blast. Really appreciate her taking the time to chat with us today. Again, just like in previous episodes, I have linked some content down below, including videos that we talked about in this episode. I highly recommend checking out Hannah's bingo games. I have linked not just the first one, but the second one as well as her traveling solo video and so many more down below. I hope that you guys have enjoyed this episode. It seems like my coffee cup is once again empty. I think it's time to fill it up so I can kick back and enjoy the next episode. Don't forget just to take a break from the world every now and then. And if you can, take some time to fill your ears and your day with something positive. Thank you guys so much for joining, and I will talk to you again real soon.